Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining us today. This is Kelly Barner, editor at Buyer's Meeting Point. Today, I would like to welcome Charles Dominick as my guest. Charles is the founder, president, and chief procurement officer of the Next Level Purchasing Association. He has authored most of the Next Level Purchasing Association's online courses and is the mastermind behind the Senior Professional in Supply Management, or SPSM, family of certifications, which are earned in over 90 countries around the world. Charles is also the co-author of the book, The Procurement Game Plan, Winning Strategies and Techniques for Supply Management Professionals. The Next Level Purchasing Association recently released their sixth annual Purchasing and Supply Management Salary Report, something we can all agree is a topic of interest for those of us in the field. And that report is what Charles joins me today to discuss. Charles, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for the opportunity to join you, Kelly.
So if you would, start us off by giving the listeners a bit of a background or overview of the report itself in case they haven't previously read it.
Sure. Well, a first-time reader of the report will probably be interested in one thing or maybe two variations of one thing. One is, how much does a procurement professional earn, or how much are procurement salaries changing year to year? So that gets answered right away. Those are the big questions. Those things get answered right away in the report. But what we really pride ourselves on at the Next Level Purchasing Association is really digging below the numbers, understanding why the numbers are the way they are, and also looking for the stories that the numbers tell. So we chop up salaries and compensation 14 different ways and look at all of these different factors that influence salaries. So by the end of reading the report, a procurement professional would have a better idea of why they earn what they earn and some different levers they can pull to really ratchet up their salary in the year or years ahead.
So I've listened to you present the findings included in the salary report in past years. You typically do a webinar to share this information, and you're always very merciful. You start off the webinar by right away giving people that one big thing that they are most interested to learn about, which is what you call the one big number, or the average salary mm-hmm. for the year, and how that compares to what we've seen in the past. So assuming you're willing to show similar mercy today, what is that one big number for 2016?
All right. Well, with the confidence that we'll get to explore it a little bit later in this interview, the average purchasing and supply management salary is $53,630.
And how does that compare to what you've seen for the same number? And again, this is the broad number. You slice and dice a bunch of different ways. But how does this year's one big number compare to what you've seen in past years?
Well, something very interesting, something very, I don't know, at the opposite end of the spectrum or at the extreme end of the spectrum, something disturbing happened. We saw the average purchasing and supply management salary decline by 7.5% versus last year, and that was after a 3% increase from the year before that and a blistering 18% increase the year before that.
Now, I'm sure part of what is so key to the number and the ways that you're able to explore it, and you do go in the report, you don't just say, oh, we've seen the number go down this year, but it went up in the past, and leave it at that. You do dig into the reasons behind that to sort of zero in on what's influencing the number. Who are the professionals, and what are the sorts of demographic information that you collect about them that allows you to do all of the digging and the analytics on what you find?
Well, what's interesting is that we have members in over 100 countries throughout the world, and we had over 1,300 participants. These are participants, supply management professionals from various countries over six continents participate in this survey. So we collect things like where they're located, because we know that has a very strong influence on what their salary is going to be. We collect information on what position they have. That obviously has a big, big influence. A junior buyer is not going to make the same amount of money as a chief procurement officer. So we collect that information as well. And our survey typically consists of over 30 questions so that we can really understand all of the factors that influence salaries, and we don't just spit out that one big number and leave it at that. Because, you know, that $53,000 number, that may sound massive if you're a junior buyer in Asia, or that may sound ridiculously low if you're a chief procurement officer in North America. So we put out that one big number. That's, you know, what people who want that merciful approach want to hear first. But then we go on and explain it. We slice it and dice it and make it as relevant as we can to each individual in their own country, in the position they're in the size of company they're in, and so forth, so they have a better feel for what their salary should be compared to their peers.
Now, as you mentioned, the number did go down this year, and I'm going to take a leap here and imply from the fact that you didn't immediately fold the Next Level Purchasing Association and go down the street and get a job at the local supermarket that hope is not lost. We should not abandon the ship. When you dug into the details, what did you find was driving that 7%+ drop?
The number one thing that we found was the exchange rate. We report our average salary numbers in U.S. dollars. So everything gets converted to U.S. dollars. Well, in the past year, between the last survey we did and the survey that we did this year, the exchange rate was very kind to the U.S. dollar. The U.S. dollar strengthened compared to a number of world currencies. And so someone whose salary stayed exactly the same in their home currency will appear to have made less money when that's converted to U.S. dollars. And I'll give a couple of examples. For example, someone in India earning about 2.3 million Indian rupee in a given year. Converted to U.S. dollars, that would mean that on January 1st, 2015, they'd be earning about 36,000 U.S. dollars, whereas that same exact salary in Indian currency would only pay that purchasing and supply management professional about $34,000 in U.S. dollars for the same exact salary in Indian rupee. Similarly, let's take Australia. Someone making $120,000 would have had the equivalent of a $98,000 salary on January 1st, 2015. On January 1st, 1 year later, that salary would only be about $88,000. So it looks like they got their salary declined by about $10,000 when really they get the same amount in their paycheck. It just their money doesn't go as far when translated to U.S. dollars. So that was really the number one thing that caused a decline in the average salary. And that's exactly why we don't stop at just spitting out that number.
And the other thing that we can't assume is that although you've done it, this is your sixth year, you've got a lot of data to look at, it's not like you've got a bunch of procurement professionals that you're tracking like a flock of tagged geese, right? So it's it's not the exact same 1,300 people every year. And so there's some change that you're probably seeing in terms of general demographics in the field. Some titles are going, some titles are coming. There's seniority level shifts. And you do make some notes about what is being seen among what you might call the millennial participants in the survey. So do you think either any of the downward pressure on the salary or any of the other demographic changes that you saw in this year's report could be due to the fact that there is a rise in young people participating as well as some retirement on the baby boomer side?
Well, we didn't really see a huge shift in the age of the people taking our survey from one year to the next. You know, maybe we can revisit, now that we have 6 years of data, go back and compare 2016 to 2011. But from 2015 to 2016, we did not see what I'd call a statistically significant shift in the age of the respondent.
So that's something that stayed relatively stable then. What do you have in the report for 2016 that is new for people who may have looked at it in the past?
Well, we always take pride in delivering new information every single year. If you've read a salary report in the past, there's going to be new stuff every year. It's just the way we do it. We never want to get stale. We always want to satisfy our curiosity and satisfy the curiosity of our members who really want to understand procurement salaries. So there's three things that I'll touch on as far as what is what we looked at differently and what we saw that was new. This year we have a new category called salaries by organizational structure. So some procurement organizations are structured with their procurement staff at the corporate headquarters, and they buy on behalf of all business units. And this we call that centralized, and for the purpose of our research, that also encompasses center-led, where maybe the strategic sourcing is done centrally, the contracting, the negotiation, but the actual order placement is done at the business units. All of that falls under what we call centralized purchasing. And then there's decentralized purchasing, where a respondent to the survey would only buy for their business unit or their plant or whatever, and someone else in the organization may be buying the same exact products or services, but they are buying for a separate business unit or a separate plant. So we never really looked at that before. Our hunch was that centralized purchasing tends to be a little more white collar in nature overall on average, but you know, is that reflected in the salaries? And we did find that there was a salary premium paid to people in a centralized purchasing environment. So that's one notable difference that we found this year. Something that we looked at a couple of years ago for the first time was salaries by category purchase, direct spend versus indirect spend, where direct spend is the products and services that get incorporated or become the product or service that the ultimate customer buys, versus indirect spend, which is operational expenses, things to keep the business running that the customer doesn't actually get part of in the product or service delivered to them. So in years past, we saw a difference in salaries there, but we decided to slice that up eight different ways. We looked at indirect spend in big companies in North America, direct spend in big companies in North America, direct spend in small companies outside of North America, and so forth. So we came up with eight different categories. And we found that there was only one where people made significantly more money buying direct goods and services. You know, in our personal observations, based on the people that we know and that we deal with, you know, it always seemed like, you know, direct spend had this cachet to it, this critical strategic importance to it. And if you were buying direct goods and services, you know, you were a top performer, you're making good money and so forth. And really, we didn't see that except for those purchasing and supply management professionals that work for large companies in North America and buy direct goods and services. In that case, those folks had an average salary of $126,643 as compared to people in similar companies of similar size also in North America. If those that buy indirect goods and services were only making an average of $111,348. So there was a significant difference. But, you know, as we looked at folks and companies, smaller companies in North America, big companies outside of North America, small companies outside of North America, the difference between direct and indirect salaries were not that great. But that was the one area where we saw that if you buy direct goods or services, you know, that's really where you can make a little money, a little more money. So that was interesting, and that was something that the numbers we reported in the past couple of years didn't tell the story that was underlying all that time. So that was an interesting thing. And then the third thing that we found is related to the one thing that is probably the most controversial finding every single year, and that's salaries by gender. And, you know, you always hear the gender gap, how women are paid woefully less than men in similar positions. And, you know, that's always frustrated us. You know, we believe in equality. We want to see equal pay for equal work. And unfortunately, you know, in this case, we're just reporting our findings, and we're always finding that female purchasing and supply management professionals are paid less than their male counterparts. Well, this year we decided to add another dimension to slice and dice it just a little bit differently. And then we took a look at female versus male salaries in age groups, in specifically in North America. And, you know, when we looked at six people who were baby boomers, 50 and up, males make a ton more. When we looked at the older Generation X, males make a lot more. But then we go into the younger part of Generation X, the folks between 30 and 39, and there's still a gap between male and female, but it's lower. And then we looked at the millennials, those that are in their 20s, and we actually found that female millennials in purchasing and supply management in North America are, on average, making more than their male counterparts. So as we go backwards from the baby boomers into the younger Gen X, we're seeing more equality, and then as we go back into the millennials, we're definitely seeing equality. So that's what we're really hoping for. I mean, you know, we do report the statistics. We report them honestly, unbiased. But, you know, as human beings, we want to see equality, and we're hoping that what we found this year with millennials having narrowed or actually closed that gender gap, that there's hope for the future. That once the baby boomers and older Gen Xers retire and exit the workforce, that we may have a purchasing and supply management workforce where there is gender equality in pay. So we looked at that for the first time this year. We're going to look at it again next year and years into the future and hope that that is the story that ends up unraveling.
Now, it's interesting that you observed that, and I remember the gender question being a big one in the 2015 report. And so it's nice to see that the move in a positive direction among younger procurement professionals. How did that play out in terms of numbers? So if millennial women seem to have a pay advantage over millennial men, are there relatively equal numbers of millennial men and women, at least that participated? Or are you seeing that maybe the impact of that higher salary on the female side is actually drawing more young female professionals to the field of procurement?
That's a good question. I don't have that piece of research in front of me, you know, how the numbers compared by age bracket. But now I'm curious to look into that to see how that actually played out. So I'm going to have to do a few filters and look up the answer to that question.
Interesting. That will be an interesting thing to see. Now, one of the other things that people may not know about you, although they will learn it very quickly by either looking at this year's report or by reading your book, is that you're a fan of sports and athletics. And in a lot of cases, it creates some very apt comparisons to what's going on in procurement. So throughout the salary report, there are almost like performance tips that you might think of as part of a training regimen that are included. And as exciting as it is to read the numbers and say, oh, isn't that nice for procurement professionals of a certain age in a certain company structure or a certain category to make that money, the real goal, I think, for most people is to sort of selfishly figure out how you can learn from this information to improve your own salary. So if we apply that to your sports and athletics analogy, I live in the Boston area, so it makes me think of what happens every year around marathon time, which is about now. But I think similar things are seen every time the Olympics come back around. So when it's the Winter Olympics and they're on TV getting a lot of coverage, there are record numbers of young people registering to take skating classes or joining hockey. It's suddenly part of our awareness. And yet, for most people who are not destined to run the Boston Marathon or skate in the Olympics, somewhere between the spark of inspiration and reaching that level of competition, something clearly gets changed in terms of priorities. So if we're sort of at our moment of being most enthusiastic, we've just read the report. What would you suggest are the choices people can make and the regimens and structures people can put in place for themselves to make sure that when the 2017 report comes out, they're not saying, oh, that's right, I was going to do all those things to help bolster my salary. They're saying, right, I read it, I learned, I put a plan in place, and now I get to put a new plan in place for myself for next year. What would you recommend that people do to positively influence their own salary?
Well, it all depends on the individual. You know, there may be thousands of people who read this report, and not all of them are going to have the same amount of spare time or ambition or whatever to do everything. You know, I mean, we analyze salaries 14 different ways, and that pretty much gives you 14 different things that you can do. The most ambitious of the readers may do all 14 of those things. The less ambitious may pick one or two, and that's fine. Now, what we find, and you know, obviously, full disclosure, Next Level Purchasing Association provides the SPSM certification, but you know, we found that that is kind of like the highest payback. Earning the SPSM certification provides like the highest payback for the least time, effort, money, investment. You know, the SPSM certification this year, we found that people who have the SPSM earn over $20,000 more than their peers who do not have a purchasing certification. You know, we also found, for example, like if you have a college degree, you're going to make more money than folks with a high school diploma. I don't believe the difference was as dramatic as if you have the SPSM certification versus no certification. And, you know, certainly if you want to go from a high school diploma to a bachelor's degree, which in North America, that difference is about $10,000 per year. You know, you're not going to get a return on investment for a few years. It's going to take you 4 years to get that degree. So just by point of comparison, you know, it's going from high school diploma to bachelor's degree is more expensive. It takes more time, than and results in a lower annual salary than if you were to earn the SPSM certification, which will it takes the average person about 7 months to earn, only requires a $1,149 investment. So that's one area that we see big ROI when you're talking about a paycheck. But, you know, so that's if you're only going to do one thing, I think that would give the reader the biggest bang for the buck. But there's other things that people can look for long term. Maybe they do want that bachelor's degree. They do want that master's degree. You know, looking at other things like by industry. There's some huge differences in industries where, you know, if you're working in the hotel industry, you may make less than $23,000 as a purchasing professional, whereas if you're working in the chemical industry, you may be making $80,000. Huge difference. So, you may want to look at different industries. We in this conversation, we talked about direct goods and services versus indirect goods and services. Well, maybe if you're an indirect buyer, you may want to look and ask about getting some experience with buying direct goods and services. If you were in a decentralized organization, you know, what would it take for you to work at headquarters and work in a centralized position where you'd get to make more money? You know, some things are easy to make switches, and other things like gender may not be as easy to make switches. So it all depends on the individual, what they're willing to add to their personal career development plan, how many of those 14 things they want to change about their career, about their demographic, in order to prepare them for the highest salary possible.
And as you started off by saying, it is, in fact, both an individual starting point and also an individual plan. And so for people to find out maybe what, in fact, they should do, the best starting point is to download and read the report because it's going to give you a sense of where you fit. So for anyone that is interested in reading the 2016 Next Level Purchasing Association Salary Report, I will make sure that there is a link to it on today's Blog Talk Radio episode page. Charles, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Kelly. It is always a pleasure to chat with you and to kind of put our heads together about what is going on in the wonderful world of procurement.
And it is a wonderful world of procurement. And thank you as well to everyone who has joined us for this BMP Radio podcast. Please feel free to share your comments and feedback on this conversation, as well as to share it with anyone from your network that you feel would benefit from the information.